You may not understand why these are the questions being asked, but that's not important. What matters is answering promptly with the first thought that comes to mind. Sib swipes the left-hand corner of the desk, and I can see the reflection of text lighting up the glass. Do you believe that everything in the world is relative? Yes, I answer. That's an easy one. I do. Do you trust reason above feelings? Sib peers closer at me. I falter, unsure which answer is the truth. I am a scientist, therefore I should be ruled by reason. But it's my gut, even more than my reasoning, that's been telling me something shifty is afoot with the Europa mission. If I can add a third choice, I would say I trust my educated intuition most of all, I finally answer. Sib doesn't object and moves on to the next question. Do images, words, or ideas often come to your mind unbidden? The robot asks. I shake my head. That's a weird one. Do you have suspicious ideas about the world around you? I freeze. Is Sib asking because the AI somehow knows what I've been thinking about the mission? Or are all the finalists being asked the same question? I don't think so, I lie, forcing myself to meet the robot's eyes. I would say I'm no more suspicious than your average person. Lastly, if you were forced to fight in self-defense, what would your preferred method be? Would you use your own body, your environment, or weapons? Another weird question. I rack my brain, thinking aloud. Well, I'm not much of a fighter. Technology is my weapon of choice. The flash drive waiting in my dorm room comes to mind, and my face turns hot. I'll go with environment. We're nearly done now. Sib double-taps the desk and then turns back to me. I just need you to take a look at some images here. I join Sib and Dot behind the desk, watching in amazement as the glass turns cloudy, colors swirling together in front of me until they form the shape of a bat extending its wings. Please memorize the image, Sib instructs, before the colors scramble together again and then fade into the clear glass. Tell us what you think it looked like. It's the Rorschach test, I say, remembering the disappearing ink blots from my intro to psychology class. The way I interpret the images will tell Dot and Sib whether or not I have any psychological disorders. If I knew how to manipulate the test, this could be my way home. But I can't go anywhere until I prove my theories about the RRB in Europa. I'm in too deep. I see a bat with its mouth wide open and its wings outstretched, I reply, going with the honest answer. After giving my interpretation of two more inkblot pictures, it's finally time to go. But while I'm relieved to be done with the test and out from under the robot's watchful eyes, a part of me is reluctant to leave this room, the place the answers lie. My words to Leo last night replay themselves in my mind. If there are biosignatures to be found, they have to still be stored within Dot and Sib. I gaze up at them now, my eyes fixating on the metal plates covering their torsos, the place where the AIOS software resides. The place where I'd break in and retrieve their secrets, if only I could. After all, based on what he said about Leo, it seems Sib is already collecting secrets of mine. We can hear the wind from the cafeteria that night, its gusts rattling the windows all through dinner. A crack of thunder echoes in the room, and as I look at the tense faces surrounding me, I know I'm not the only one worrying about what this means. We've been so sheltered here at ISTC, with all the barriers and fortifications keeping the tide at bay, that it's been easy, at least for me, to pretend that we're safe from the raging storms as long as we're here. But this is the first time the sounds of outside have infiltrated our walls, and it makes me wonder what's coming. I can't stand the thought of having to go back out there, Katerina says, eyeing the window. It's crazy to know we're just 3 days away from the first elimination. Don't worry, I bet you'll get chosen, right along with me, the ever-confident Beckett assures her, giving Katerina a flirtatious smile. Gross. He glances at Lark. Don't you think so? You know I can't say a word on that topic, Lark reminds him, before taking a bite of chicken tikka masala from tonight's menu. Besides, I honestly don't know. I mean, I have my opinions, but Dr. Takumi and the General haven't told me which way they're leaning. Well, have you given them your input on who you think the final six should be? Beckett asks, watching her carefully. I try to catch Leo's eye to make a face, but he is preoccupied, staring at Beckett with a slight frown. Come to think of it, he's been acting weird since the bungee jumping day. Lark laughs, waving Beckett off. Again, no comment. Dr. Takumi has made it very clear that I'm not to discuss this with you. However, I can confidently say that any one of you would be a true asset to the mission. I'm so nervous, Asher buries his head in his hands. What's even the point of trying to eat? Does this mean none of you feel any different about the mission after what happened to Suki and Callum? I ask. Lark shoots me a warning glance, but I'm genuinely curious. Aren't they at least a little less gung-ho now? I feel awful for them, of course I do, but I trust Dr. Takumi when he says the rest of us should be safe, Katerina replies. And if you knew what I'd be going back to... She shudders. Besides, how could you not want to be one of the 6 humans in the world to live out an adventure greater than anything in history? Sounds like that doesn't interest her, Beckett says, jerking his thumb in my direction before turning to Lark. Maybe she should just go home now if her heart's not in it. I'm more than happy to carry the American flag on my own. I'm right here, I snap at him. Just because he happens to be correct that I'm not ready to take a one-way trip off our planet doesn't mean I'll sit back and let him try to undermine me. That's not how this works, Beckett, Lark says, arching an eyebrow at him. Having the right set of skills and characteristics matters more to the mission leaders than who's the most eager. While he grumbles into his plate, I turn back to Katerina. Could you go somewhere other than Russia? I mean, if you didn't get chosen. I don't even want to think about what I'd do, she says flatly. But to my surprise, Lark backs me up again. Actually, it's smart to think about and prepare for either scenario, she says. The reality is, not everyone gets to go to Europa, and I'm sure there are some things from your normal lives that you'd be glad to return to, right? I don't know where I'd go, Leo speaks up, shaking his head. But it won't be Rome. There are too many ghosts for me there. I would have to start over somewhere new. I can't go back to Israel either, Asher says, staring at the table. Our entire land is under the Mediterranean now. Before the draft, I just moved in with my aunt and uncle to their 2-room flat in Surrey. I know I'm lucky to have a roof over my head, but I never thought I would have to become a Yerida. He glances back up at us. That's what we call those who emigrate from Israel. I would have stayed forever, on the same street where I grew up, if I could have. You realize how much of yourself is wrapped up in where you're from once it's taken away, Leo says. The two of them share a knowing glance, and I suddenly feel out of my depth. I don't have a right to be a part of this conversation, not when I have my parents and little brother waiting for me at home, when I have an actual home, period. It's strange to think that my intact family marks me as different, unrelatable, in my teammates' eyes. And as I gaze across the table at Leo and Asher, a wave of helplessness washes over me. There's nothing I can do to change their situations. Nothing. You can try to keep a part of it with you, though, Katerina says. After Moscow went under, I found I missed the nights most of all. The way the monuments looked all lit up, the energy in the capital city before everything sank. So I started painting it all from memory, and even though I'm not the best artist, it really helps. It's sort of like reliving your past on the canvas. That's a beautiful idea, Lark says. She turns to Beckett. What about you?
What about me? He asks gruffly.
You'd go back to D.C., right? Is there anything you miss about home or would look forward to seeing again? A funny look crosses his face, and then he nods.
Yeah, the White House doesn't suck. My uncle lets us live there since it has all the best flood barriers and weather protections, but I don't think I'm going back. He lifts his chin. I was always meant for something bigger.
I guess in 3 days we'll know, Asher says, taking a deep breath. I glance back at Leo, wondering how much time we have left. How much longer will his friendship be in my life? In 3 days, we'll know.
15. Leo. I wake to the sound of a sickening crack, the sound a tree might make if it snapped its neck. I struggle to sit up, but my bed is shaking, the ground rumbling and sliding beneath it. Earthquake! Asher shouts. Cover your head! I duck under the sheets, shoving my pillow over my head as the walls convulse around us. I brace myself for the shards of shattered glass to come flying, for the furniture to smash to the ground, just like the day the waves crashed through the windows of Rome. But then I remember. There are no windows in this room. Our furniture is bolted to the floor. NASA prepared for everything. Just as I'm convincing myself that it's merely an earthquake, that it won't be like Rome all over again, a clap of thunder breaks through the noise, followed by a growing roar. It sounds like a freight train is speeding straight toward us. That can only mean one thing. Tsunami! I try to yell, but my voice is garbled and barely makes a sound. Tsunami! The water lashes at the walls, the floor rocking from the earthquake's aftershocks. I hear Asher begin to pray in Hebrew, his voice rising in panic, and I squeeze my eyes shut, seeing my mother's face. Her skin was blue when I finally found her in the water, a sight that caused me to throw up for days. But now, I am joining her. I thought I had more time left. Time to tell Naomi how I feel, to be one of the first humans to set foot on Europa. But I can feel the hand of Earth reaching down to take me. And then the door flies open. I pull the covers from my eyes and see the outline of a body swaying in the doorway. Get dressed as fast as you can and meet me at the foot of the stairs, Lark's voice shouts. Don't forget shoes and flashlights. She disappears to the next door, and I struggle out of bed, feeling my way to the dresser in the darkness. We throw on clothes, and then bolt out of the room and into the dorm corridor. The floor beneath us seems to have solidified, but the wind howls like a threat, warning us that the danger hasn't passed. The high-pitched wail of an alarm follows us through the halls as we reach the crowd of disheveled finalists and staff at the foot of the stairs. Dr. Takumi and General Sokolov stand before us, their expressions strained as they scan our faces in the glow of flashlights, taking a head count. And then Dr. Takumi leads us forward to the wall opposite the stairs. What's happening? Someone cries in my ear, and I shake my head, watching as Takumi presses a button on his watch, and a camouflage door swings open within the wall. It looks like some kind of emergency tunnel, with sandbags lining the space, and a water dispenser and row of canned food in the corner. As Dr. Takumi herds us all inside, a hand finds my arm in the dark. I know without looking that it's Naomi. We make our way deeper into the passage, and I hear the general's voice over my shoulder. Dot and Sib, what about—
They're fine, Dr. Takumi interrupts. Safe in their charging pods.
And the power?
It should be back on once we're out of here, he answers.
That's when Naomi's hand slips out of my grasp.
I turn and whisper her name, but she's already gone, her sweater flapping behind her as she disappears out of the tunnel. And the tunnel door starts sliding to a close. My heart is in my throat, my palms sweating as I make the split-second decision. Do I stay in the safety of the emergency tunnel, or follow her? The obvious choice is to stay put. The combination of earthquake aftershocks and a nearby tsunami are a lethal pair.
But the thought of anything happening to Naomi springs me into action.
I back away from the crowd, flattening my body as I approach the tunnel opening. When I'm somewhat confident no one is looking, I jump out of the tunnel, making it a second before the door closes. I watch as the bunker seals shut, leaving me exposed to the elements. And then I run to the stairs, stumbling down the last few steps as the angry earth shudders with aftershocks. Once I reach the fourth floor, I find the shattered window panes I was expecting, and I weave around the thick, broken shards until I spot a lithe figure up ahead.
What the hell are you doing? I yell as I catch up to her.
Naomi spins around and shines her flashlight on me.
But then she keeps moving.
This is my shot, she pants. The robots are alone. I'll never get a chance like this again.
Are you out of your mind? How could you risk your life for this experiment? I sputter.
If I get the proof I suspect, I'll be saving lives. 6 of them, she shoots back.
Don't worry about me, please. Just go back to the others.
I shake my head in frustration. I'm not leaving you now.
I follow as she races to the robotics lab, barely able to hear myself think through the rumble of thunder and the shrieking wind outside. We reach the blue-painted door, and I'm just about to remind Naomi that we can't get in without a pass, until she turns the handle and it swings open.
How did that happen?
It's an electronic lock, she explains, pulling me inside with her. When the power went out, the locks were disabled. Same with the cameras.
So then aren't the robots shut down too? In which case, what are we doing here?
The AIs run on solar power, since they were built specifically for the spacecraft,
Naomi says,
so the blackout doesn't affect them. It only affects their surroundings. We step into the lab, which looks eerier than usual under the pale glow of our flashlights. I bump straight into a robot under construction, and I cover my mouth as its dismembered head sways on its stand, toppling to the floor with a thud. "Oh, no," I moan.
Naomi shushes me,
pulling me toward the two glowing sleep pods in the center of the room. "I'm going into Dots," she tells me, pointing at the pod on the right. "Can you keep watch and make sure Sib doesn't come out of sleep mode, and that no one comes in?" What exactly are you planning to do?"
"You'll see," she says grimly.
"Wish me luck."
"This is crazy,"
I mumble, positioning myself between Sib's pod and the door.
I watch as Naomi takes a deep breath
and lifts the lid on Dot's pod. Dot's artificial eyes snap open, and my stomach jumps, but Naomi murmurs something to the machine while quickly turning two of the knobs inside the pod. Suddenly, Dot's eyes are closed again, her chassis lifeless. "Can you hand me a screwdriver?" she calls out. "What? Where?" I can't stop staring at Dot.
What did Naomi do to her?
"We're in a robotics lab. There should be a screwdriver on every desk. While you're at it, you might want to grab a stun gun, too. Just to be safe." "Excuse me?"
Naomi pauses.
"Don't look at me like that. It's just a precaution in case Sib wakes up while I'm in here. The electric shock will disable the AI and freeze his memory for 3 minutes, giving us enough time to get away. And then he'll be fine." I reluctantly leave my guard position and make my way to the first desk I see, rummaging through the mess of tools until I find a screwdriver and a small metal stun gun, the size of one of my father's old fountain pens. I shove it in my pocket, and as I hand the screwdriver to Naomi, I can't help saying, "I love how you thought you could do this without any help."
"Well, I could have," she replies. "It just would have taken me longer. But thank you."
I return to my watch as Naomi uses the screwdriver to pry open a recessed compartment in the robot's back, leaving Dot with a gaping hole. I'm slightly horrified and yet also fascinated by the sight. And then Naomi pulls something small and shiny from her pocket and plugs it into a port in Dot's back. She fiddles with the dials and sensors on the robot's arm until a small screen on Dot's chest lights up, flashing with symbols and numbers. I wait for what feels like an eternity as Naomi's hands move across the screen, typing and swiping on the robot's chest, while each sound and creak in the room sets me more on edge. Finally, she removes the flash drive and screws Dot's recessed compartment back on, returning the robot to its normal appearance, all while it remains in sleep mode. "Okay, let's go now!" She tosses the screwdriver on one of the desks and returns to my side, looking nervous for the first time. She doesn't need to tell me twice. I grab her hand and we break into a run, slamming the door shut behind us.
"What were you doing exactly?"
I ask as we race down the corridor, sidestepping fallen shelves and broken glass.
Naomi hesitates before answering.
"I have my own hacking software on a flash drive, and before you say anything, I'm not a criminal."
"Not really. This is only the second time I've used it. The first time is to get my brother's medical records when the hospital was taking too long to release his results."
I stop in my tracks.
"So you really did it?
You hacked the robot?"
"Yeah. I basically used my malware to access Dot's SSH connection, and I reconfigured the AI operating system to connect to my own tablet. Once I plug the drive into my tablet, I'll be able to program and direct Dot just like the ISTC leaders do from their computers. So Dot will think it's them giving commands. That's step one of how I'm going to get the truth about Europa."
She turns to me with a steely look.
"And no one but you will ever know."
I stare at her.
"Do you even realize how scary you can be?"
But something in the way I say it makes Naomi burst into unexpected laughter. I try to shush her as we flee the scene, but now she has a case of uncontrollable nervous giggles, and I can't help laughing too. At least if this storm kills us, or Dr. Takumi finds us and does the job himself, we'll literally die laughing, I remark. Suddenly, the smile slips off her face. She switches off her flashlight and grabs my arm, yanking me around a corner. That's when I hear the unmistakable sound of footsteps. We're not alone.
16. Naomi. I can feel the blood roaring in my ears, the breath trapped in my throat, as Leo and I flatten ourselves against the wall. There is nothing we can do now but listen to the excruciating sound of footsteps in the dark and wait out our last moments of freedom. Dr. Takumi's list of potential punishments runs through my mind and my hands start to shake. I was stupid to think I could get away with this, and now Leo has to pay the price for what I did. All my bravado is gone, and I look to him, hoping he is as strong in this moment as he looks. As the footsteps march closer, I turn my face toward his. I'm sorry, I mouth. Leo nods, reaches for my hand. Through the dark, I notice the outline of his lips. There is so much unspoken between us, so much I want to say, and now we're about to get caught. Security breach detected. Attention, security breach detected. I freeze at the sound of the mechanical voices echoing toward us, and then a light shines in my eyes and my head snaps up. This time, I can't hold back my scream. Three faceless utility robots circle us, compact versions of Dot and Sib, but just as intimidating in the dark. Army insignias glow across their metal chests, and I realize these are Dr. Takumi's soldiers. Source of breach uncovered, one of the robots drones, marching toward us with handcuffs. Finalists out of bounds! A zapping sound crackles through the air, and I jump back at the sight of the flying blue current. One of the robots hits the floor with a crash, and I turn in amazement to see Leo, aiming the stun gun from the lab at the remaining two. They reach into their holsters, withdrawing arms of their own. Zap! Zap! The breath whooshes from my lungs as the second and third AIs fall. And then Leo is seizing my hand, both of us lunging forward into a run, the adrenaline and fear driving my body faster than I've ever moved in my life. Neither of us says a word as we sprint toward the staircase, and for once I'm thankful for the rain and thunder as it muffles the sound of us pounding up the steps, our panting breaths. Within minutes, we're back on the HAB floor, running past the deserted cafeteria and library to the darkened dorm wing. My heartbeat only starts to stabilize when we reach the corridor that separates the girls' wing from the boys'. We made it. You are amazing, I whisper. Thank you. Leo shakes his head, his expression dazed. You're the one who told me to grab the stun gun. I just remembered to use it. The way you used it is the reason we're standing here now. I touch his arm. I was wrong before, when I said I didn't need you. A smile lights his face. I'll remember that. And maybe now you can take a break from trying to get in as much trouble as possible. I guess I do owe you that much, I say wryly. And I promise I'll wait for a few days to go by before I even attempt to access Dot with my drive to make sure no one's onto us. What about the utility robots? Leo winces. Are you sure I didn't do any permanent damage? I'm sure. And the electric shocks wiped the past 3 minutes of their memories, which means they'll have no data of seeing us. I take a step closer to him. Once again, you were amazing. I'm really sorry I almost roped you into disaster. Maybe I should be mad, he acknowledges. But before I followed you, I was back in that dark place that storms always bring me to. You distracted me, so maybe it was worth it. My chest fills with warmth at his words. I'm glad. And I have to admit, I never thought I'd see the day where I'd manage to disarm three robots. I won't forget that one. He grins. You definitely have bragging rights for days, I agree, smiling back. So what should we say tomorrow when people ask why we weren't in the tunnel? I'm guessing they noticed. I nod, thinking quickly. Let's just pretend we didn't make it to the tunnel in time, that we were lagging behind and the door closed before we got there, so we had to wait out the storm in our rooms. I know Dr. Takumi took a head count when we were still there, but between the finalists and instructors and all the chaos, it's not hard to believe that he could have counted an extra two. Yeah, that makes sense. He takes a breath. Good night, Naomi. Night, Leo.
He inches closer to me and then seems to think better of it, backing away again. I wish he hadn't. Sleep well, and for God's sake, hide that flash drive, somewhere no one in the world could find it but you. I will. I've taken to keeping it right here. I gesture to my bra and then instantly turn bright red. Too much information, Naomi. Oh, good thinking, Leo stammers. Well, I'll see you in the morning then. See you. As I watch his retreating figure turn toward the boys' wing, I can't help smiling. It's nice to see him a little flustered. I'm just managing to drift off to sleep when the sound of someone barging through my door jolts me awake. I sit upright, heart racing, as Lark slams the door behind her and looms over my bed. Her eyes flash with fury. "What were you thinking?" she snaps. "Do you realize I risked my job covering for the two of you?" She knows. I open my mouth to speak, but nothing comes out. My throat is like sandpaper. I grasp for the right words to explain, to sugarcoat what I did, but I can't come up with anything better than a pathetic, "It's not what you think." "Oh, it's exactly what I think." Lark's eyes are like daggers. "I should have guessed earlier. It was obvious something was going on between the two of you, but I didn't think you'd ever be so reckless as to risk your lives during a storm and sneak off together, right under Dr. Takumi's nose." My face heats up in embarrassment as I realize what Lark's getting at. But then, could her misunderstanding let us off the hook? "So you're saying you know about me and Leo?" I ask, testing her. "Obviously," she throws her hands up in exasperation. "What do you have to say for yourself?" "I'm sorry, really sorry. We just thought this would be our only chance to be alone," I fib. Lark shakes her head. "I warned them about bringing teenage hormones into this, but of course, no one listened to me." What did you tell Dr. Takumi and the general?" I ask. "About us, I mean." "You're both lucky I thought on my feet. When the others noticed you were gone, I put two and two together and figured out what you were really up to." She gives me a pointed look. "So I said I saw you both come running to the tunnel just before the door closed and that you missed it." "The same excuse I planned," I note with amusement. "General Sokolov wanted to open the door in case you were still there waiting, but I said you'd probably gone back to your rooms by then and it wasn't worth exposing the rest of us to the elements. But if she or Dr. Takumi had pressed the issue and found out that you disobeyed their orders to go suck face, well, the two of you would be toast." I'm too mortified to look her in the eye, and also a bit deflated at the realization that my personal life is a whole lot more exciting in Lark's mind than in reality. But I am curious about one thing. "Why did you cover for us? I'm incredibly grateful, believe me," I add hurriedly. "I just can't help wondering, since you seem awfully mad." "Oh, I am mad," she says icily. "But I already lost one team member before the first eliminations. The last thing I want is to show up on Friday as the only leader with half their team already gone. I know Dr. Takumi, and he would blame me for your transgressions." So she's not looking out for us out of the goodness of her heart. But in a way, her motive makes it easier for me to believe we really are safe, at least for now. I feel my muscles begin to relax. "Thank you, Lark. I mean it. This is the only time, though," she warns me. "From now on, you two are going to have to do a much better job of covering up whatever is going on here. Or better yet, nipping it in the bud. It can only work against you with Dr. Takumi and the general." "You're right," I nod automatically. "I'm sorry. We'll end it." Before it's even begun. She moves toward the door, seemingly satisfied by my remorse. "One more thing," she says on her way out. "You owe me one. Remember that." The power is back on by morning, but when we arrive at the cafeteria, Dr. Takumi announces that the day's training sessions have all been canceled. The staff here at ISTC and Johnson Space Center need to focus on repairs and equipment checks in the aftermath of last night, he explains. "So after breakfast, instead of going into a training session, you'll be following me to the media room." I watch Dr. Takumi carefully as he speaks, trying to gauge whether anything is different, if he has any inkling that something went down in the robotics lab last night, or if he bought Lark's explanation of where me and Leo were. But when his eyes roam over our team table and land on me, his expression is unreadable. I wonder if I can take that as a good sign. Dr. Takumi leads the way to a space we haven't seen before, a small room at the end of the HAB floor that resembles a movie theater. A large screen unfurls across the front wall, the image paused on what looks like the TV news, something we haven't been allowed to watch since we arrived here. Once we're all seated, Dr. Takumi paces to the front of the screen. Last night, we experienced a taste of the devastation that shook the American South, with its effects felt even farther beyond. A 7.0 earthquake and a mid-level tsunami triggered by the quake's undersea megathrust, he says. Thanks to our extreme precaution methods, Johnson Space Center suffered comparatively little damage. However, very few buildings in the country are privileged with this level of protection. You will find that the majority of others in our region did not fare as well. My stomach clenches at his words. How many died? How far did the disaster stretch? Please let California be safe, I pray silently. Please let my family be untouched by this. It's important for you to recognize the suffering going on outside these walls and to understand why the Europa mission is the answer, Dr. Takumi continues. To keep you informed and remind you of what's at stake, I'm lifting the TV restrictions today. I glance at Leo and Asher on either side of me, unsure how I feel about this. On one hand, it's a relief to be able to catch a glimpse of the outside world after being out of the loop for so long. But there is something manipulative about Dr. Takumi letting us watch the news on a day when the images are certain to be harrowing. I take a deep breath, bracing myself as the screen flickers to life. But even after everything I've seen in the past 2 years, there's no way to prepare for this. The sight of skyscrapers swaying and sinking into the waves while the earth shakes, the echoing screams of the hundreds of victims trapped inside. I grip the armrest with white knuckles as the scene shifts to a weary-looking anchorman facing the camera. We are looking at the wreckage of Oklahoma City, which faced widespread destruction last night in the earthquake and subsequent tsunami, he reports. The landmark Chase Tower was one of the buildings to fall, and the entire state of Oklahoma is still out of power. He rubs his face, seems to fight back tears. This marks another city taken from us by Mother Nature. Panic presses against my chest. I can't watch anymore. I can't listen to them counting the casualties. And as the footage pans over anguished Americans, standing in the waist-high rubble and water where their homes used to be, I shoot out of my seat. My family may be miles away from the epicenter of the storm, but they're not far enough to escape its reach, not in this disfigured earth we're living in. And I can't sit here a second longer, not until I know if they're safe. I can feel the other finalists' eyes on me as I dash toward Dr. Takumi, who stands by the screen with a poker-faced expression. Please, I need to see my family, to know if they're okay. I look him in the eye, hoping against hope that my desperation might move him. Is there anything you can do? Can we arrange a video chat for today? He sighs. I can feel his refusal coming, and I try another tack. Not just for me, but for Beckett, too. I'm sure he's worried about how things are looking in D.C. It may be easy to deny me a favor, but Beckett is a different story. The President of the United States is one of the key figures who signed off on this mission, who helped get Congress to bankroll it. If Dr. Takumi thinks his nephew wants to see him... Fine, he relents. But let it be known to all of you that this is a one-time exception. If we allowed spontaneous video chats every time a natural disaster occurred, we'd be spending all day in front of the computer instead of preparing for the mission at hand. Thank you, I cry before turning to Beckett in the audience and mouthing, "You're welcome." After all, it's because of me that he gets to check on his family. But he just looks away with a scowl. Sam! My eyes well up with relief as soon as I see his face. He's okay, he's okay. My mind chants on a loop, the air seeping back into my lungs. But as I look closer at my brother, I notice something is different. His eyes are hollow, all the light gone from them. It's like looking at someone with my brother's face, but none of his spirit. What happened? I ask, afraid to hear the answer. Is it Mom or Dad? Where are they? They're fine. The only reason they're not here right now is because they're helping the downstairs neighbors evacuate. The lower floor flooded completely in the storm, he says heavily. I flinch at the thought of the sweet, elderly Burstein's being forced to flee. Did they lose everything? Where are they going to go? They salvaged what they could, but... He shakes his head. They're staying with us in your room until they can get a hold of other family. I'm glad they'll be with you guys, I say quietly. So our apartment is okay then? Yeah, it managed to stay afloat. The damage wasn't as bad up here. But listen, Naomi. He takes another breath and I notice how shallow it sounds. Are you okay? How are you feeling? I interrupt him. The same, he answers, and I don't know whether to be relieved or worried. The same isn't necessarily good news for my brother, but if he's telling me the truth, then at least he hasn't gotten worse while I've been away. What I was about to say is, I've been thinking about something since we last talked, and... He meets my eyes. I don't want you to come home. I recoil in my seat. What? What are you saying? I want you to forget the message I gave you. He looks away. I realize now it was selfish of me to want you to come back. I've lost count of how many times this planet has tried to kill us. Whatever is on Europa, it can't be worse than here. So, you have to go. My mouth falls open. I can't believe what I'm hearing. You want me to leave Earth? To possibly never see you again? I want you to save yourself, he says. You've been given an opportunity, and I don't want to be the one holding you back. Plus, if the mission has any hope of succeeding, it needs a brain like yours. He musters a smile. The future needs you. But what about you? I'll be okay. He gives a resigned shrug. I'm a lot tougher than I seem, you know? I shouldn't have pushed you to try to come home. Besides, I've been thinking of ways I can help you on Europa from here. The old spark briefly returns to his eyes. You're not the only one good with computers. But I want to tell him to forget what he's saying, that I hacked out last night and set a plan in motion. But of course I can't. I can only hope he reads the truth in my face. 2 more minutes, Lark calls out from the doorway where she's supervising Beckett and me. I hold on to the edges of the computer monitor as if I can somehow keep my brother close. It's not my decision to make, but I lower my voice. Even if I get chosen in the end, I'm still not giving up. Not on you or on Earth. Sam smiles sadly. But you should. Let go of us, sis. Let go and soar like you're meant to. No, I whisper. You don't know. But the screen is flickering, turning pixelated. Our time is up.
17. Leo. I hear Asherer awaken early on the morning of the first elimination, and I listen as he begins murmuring to himself in Hebrew. The sound is a comfort to my nerves. My family was never very religious. We observed all holidays at Basilica di Sant'Agostino, and that was the extent of it. But in this moment, when our fates and futures lie in the control of someone else, I close my eyes, imagining my mother, father, and Angelica somewhere in the air above, listening to my thoughts. Maybe I can make up my own prayer. To them. Watch over me today, familia. Please let me be one of the 12 still standing at the end of the night. Help me make it all the way to Europa as one of the final 6. With Naomi there too. And Asher. Without you, this is all I have. The alarm in our LED mirror bursts to life. I stretch and sit up in bed as Asher tucks what looks like a prayer book back in the desk drawer. Here goes, he says, turning to me with a pale face. I nod. Do you think we'll find out right away? Maybe, but if they're still not 100% sure, they might drag this out as late as they can. Asher is right. At breakfast, we learn we'll be undergoing a last-chance astronaut physical, a comprehensive exam to evaluate how our bodies are adjusting to the RRB and to ensure no new conditions or weaknesses have gone undetected. I can barely swallow 2 bites of my breakfast after hearing about all the medical poking and prodding that lies ahead. What if they find something that ruins my shot? I can't fathom being so close only to lose it all in the last stretch. Glancing around the table, it's clear my teammates share my anxiety. Even the possibly cold-blooded Beckett Wolf can't hide his nerves as he taps his foot restlessly against the floor. Lark shuttles us to the main medical facility on Johnson Space Center campus, and as we step onto the main outpatient floor, 5 doors open in unison, 1 for each of us. Go on. Lark ushers us forward, and I exchange 1 last look with Naomi before we each disappear into one of the patient rooms. I sit on the examination chair, staring straight ahead, as a soft-spoken nurse checks my vitals and draws multiple vials of blood for the array of tests. She listens to my ears and heart, and puts me through one of those mindless letter chart vision tests, all while I silently command my body to stay calm, to not betray my nerves with a jittery heartbeat or anything that the nurse might question. And then, after nearly an hour, I'm ushered into the next room, a small, sterile space with only a table and two chairs to fill it. A bearded man sits at one end of the table, consulting a clipboard. "I'm Dr. Dwyer," he greets me, extending his palm for a handshake. "I'll be administering your final psych evaluation. If you make the final six, you will be hearing from me regularly while in space, as mental check-ins are a crucial part of the process when leaving Earth." "Sounds good." I smile at him, trying to appear even-keeled and confident, despite the sight of this stranger giving me a chill of foreboding. To have someone brand new evaluating us at the very last moment makes me even more vulnerable than I was before. What if I make the wrong first impression and have no time to change his mind? "Have a seat," he instructs me. "Today, you'll be completing the MMPI-3 standardized psychological test, which consists of a series of statements that you will label true or false. Let me know when you're ready." I nod. "Ready." "First statement. A person should try to understand his dreams and be guided by or take warning from them. True or false?" I have no clue what he wants to hear, which leaves me no choice but to answer with my gut reaction and hope it produces the desired result. "True." "Next. Once in a while, you think of things too bad to talk about. True or false?" My mind flashes back to the day that was supposed to be my last, when I came so close to making a terrible choice. If they knew, would they see me as another Callum? I shake my head, giving Dr. Dwyer what I hope is a calm glance. "False." And on it goes for the next hour, each question more unpredictable than the next, leaving me increasingly uncertain how I'm doing. Finally, we reach the last one. "If confronted with a potentially threatening creature of foreign origin, your first instinct is to kill it and protect yourself. True or false?" My head snaps up. What in the world? False. Dr. Dwyer nods and makes a series of scribbled notes, before finally excusing me out into the hall where Lark waits. But I can't get that last question off my mind. I wonder if it has to do with Europa. By 5 p.m., the judges are still deliberating our fates. Lark informs us that Dr. Takumi, General Sokolov, and the robots are sequestered somewhere on campus, reviewing our astronaut physical results and discussing the pros and cons of all 22 of us. There's no telling how long we'll be waiting. With no training to occupy us, and no Wi-Fi, cell phones, or TV to distract us, we are alone with our suspense. The teams are intermingled as we wait in the lounge, and I share a couch with Asher and Naomi, the three of us making a hopeless attempt at talking about something, anything other than the draft. Seated on the other side of us are Dev Khanna and the Canadian finalist, a tall, slender girl with dark skin and eyes named Sydney Pearl. She sits with her head between her knees, muttering something under her breath, while Dev awkwardly pats her on the back. "I know how you feel," I say, leaning over to her. "There's no real way to prepare for a competition on this scale." She lifts her face with a groan.
"That's not it." "She doesn't know whether she wants to stay or go home," Dev explains, "which is a bit unusual in this crowd."
Naomi and I exchange a look. "Trust me," she tells Sydney, "it's not that unusual, and it's hard to feel so out of control."
Sydney nods, looking at Naomi as if seeing her for the first time.
Yes, it's maddening.
I wish I felt indecisive like you two, Asher says glumly. Then it wouldn't be so hard if I get cut.
You have some of the best odds out of anyone, I encourage him. I mean, who else here is a trained pilot?
Jiansu, Dev chimes in, not exactly helping.
Exactly, Asher says, his voice dropping. And even if I happen to be better at flying than he is, it doesn't really matter, does it? Not when they have a perfect piloting machine in Sib.
Naomi wraps a comforting arm around his shoulder.
It'll be okay. Whatever happens, we can help each other get through it.
She glances at me.
Right?
I stare at her and Asher, my two closest friends here, who I never imagined together in that way. But now, seeing them looking close and cozy brings a pang to my chest.
What if they were to get chosen without me?
She looks at me questioningly, and I clear my throat.
Right. We'll be okay.
A rush of footsteps comes clattering through the doorway, and we all glance up. Lark and two other team leaders burst into the lounge, excitement vibrating off their skin.
They've made their decision, Lark exclaims. We're meeting Dr. Takumi, the general, and the AIs in the cafeteria right now. Dinner will be served after the announcement.
Seriously?
Dev whispers to me.
Who's actually going to eat after that?
But I'm too shaken up to answer.
This is it.
I'm either going to continue on for two more weeks here and have an exponentially bigger chance at making the final six, or I'll be released back into the emptiness of an earthbound life tonight. As if sensing my emotions, Naomi squeezes my arm. I gaze down at her, and suddenly I am bargaining with the universe.
If we both make it to the next round, I'll stop skating around how I feel. I'll tell her, even if it means rejection.
My legs are like lead as we march to the cafeteria. Dr. Takumi, General Sokolov, Dot, and Sib stand in a line on the raised platform.
Here we go.
Beckett and Katarina, who were missing from the lounge, are already seated at our team table when we arrive. I still haven't spoken a word to Beckett since the bungee jumping incident, and as I slide into my seat, I add an addendum to my prayer.
Please let them cut the right person today. Beckett Wolf.
Welcome, finalists, to one of the key milestones in the Europa mission.
Dr. Takumi greets us, his voice booming through the tense quiet of the room.
With the most impressive teenagers in the world to choose from, it was an extremely difficult decision. The 10 of you leaving us tomorrow morning should know that it was a close call, and you have much to be proud of. He clears his throat. Without further ado, your mission pilot, Sib, will announce the names of the 12 finalists moving forward in the draft.
I can hear my heart thumping wildly as the robot shuffles forward.
From the United Kingdom, Diana Dormer, Sib's mechanical voice calls out. From India, Dev Khanna. From Ukraine, Minka Paladin. From Italy, Leonardo Danieli.
Yes!
I punch the air in celebration, almost dizzy from the sound of my name. I did it. I made it.
Beckett looks at me like he's just tasted something rotten, while Naomi smiles at the sight of my happiness, and Asher thumps me on the back in congratulations. Suddenly, I'm nervous all over again.
Asher and Naomi have to get chosen, too. I can't imagine this place without them.
From France, Henry Durand. From Canada, Sydney Pearl.
The tension in the room mounts as Sib reaches the halfway mark. I can hear Katarina's legs jangling under the table, her feet tapping uncontrollably, while Beckett's face takes on a purplish hue.
Naomi fidgets in her seat.
Asher takes short, shallow breaths. Only six more names.
From Japan, Ami Nakamura. From the United States.
Naomi's head jerks up.
I grab her hand under the table.
Beckett Wolf.
No.
My spirits plummet as Beckett celebrates in his seat high-fiving Katerina. My competition, and the most ruthless person here, remains. Naomi's body sags at the realization that it isn't her, though I can't tell whether from relief or disappointment. From Spain, Ana Martinez. From Russia. Katerina sits up excitedly, and Beckett gives her a knowing smile. Evgeny Alkayev. Katerina's mouth falls open. And now we've reached the final two.
I grip Naomi's hand again,
closing my eyes and concentrating on her name, as if I can somehow manipulate the outcome. From China, Jian Su. My shoulders slump.
I look from Asher to Naomi and back again.
After today, I might never see one or both of them again. Lastly, from the United States,
Naomi Ardalan.
I hear her gasp, feel my own breath return to me, and then I throw my arms around her, unable to contain the huge grin spreading across my face. She smiles back at me, and I wonder if maybe, in spite of herself, she really did want to stay. The feel of her hair against my cheek and her body pressed to mine has me almost intoxicated. Something flickers in my chest as I look into her shining dark eyes, and I pull back before I give myself away. That's when I see Asher's face, and it hits me with a blow. He's leaving. Katerina scrapes back her chair and runs from the room, the sound of a muffled sob following her. I expect Beckett to run after her,
but it's Naomi who goes, calling out for her to wait.
I move into the empty chair next to Asher.
I don't know what to say,
I tell him, wincing at the uselessness of my words.
It should have been you two.
Beckett leans in.
Don't worry, you guys will see each other again. You're not long for this either, Italian.
Rage boils inside me as I whip my head to face Beckett. Are you serious right now? He gives me a cold smile before pushing back from the table.
Well, they don't need two underwater specialists on the mission, and we both know it's going to be me in the end.
You're delusional, I call out to his retreating figure as he goes to congratulate the rest of the 12 like a true politician.
Don't let him be right,
Asher finally speaks up. As he looks at me, I can see the crushing loss and disappointment reflected in his eyes.
If it can't be me, I want it to be you. And not Beckett.
18. Naomi. The eliminated finalists are gone by morning. There's no farewell breakfast, no exchanging of email addresses and cell phone numbers like on the last day of summer camp. They are just gone, their belongings and presents wiped clean from the HAB floor. I feel a pang of regret that I didn't get a proper goodbye with Asher. When he left the cafeteria after the announcement, I was sure he would come back, that we'd have one last dinner as a team. But he and Katerina never returned. And now it's just me, Leo, and Beckett sitting around the breakfast table, with Lark between us as a buffer. While Beckett peppers her with questions about what's next, I turn away, my eyes taking in the half-empty room. Hey, Leo nudges me gently. How are you feeling? I'm not sure. The truth is, it feels like my mind is toying with me. I knew I wasn't ready to leave yesterday, not yet, not with my discovery still hanging in the balance, and not with Leo still here. But, as I imagine an alternate reality with me as one of the eliminated 10, I'm overcome by a wave of sadness. I could have been on my way home this very moment. I could have been minutes away from my family's arms. And now, who knows when I will see them again? What about you? I ask, changing the subject. Leo takes a deep breath. It was tough to see Asher go. My room feels weird, empty. I nod, thinking about Suki. I know the feeling. But I'm hopeful, too. Leo leans in closer, giving me a small smile. About everything. And as he looks at me, I feel a shiver working its way through my body, one that I know has nothing to do with space.
Good morning to the top 12,
Dr. Takumi strides into the room and all conversation comes to a halt. How does it feel to have made it another week? Incredible, Beckett yells. Dev lets out a whoop from the next table over, and soon the room is filling with cheers, my fellow finalists letting loose and celebrating in ways they couldn't last night. I scan the room for the Canadian finalist, Sydney, possibly the only person here who knows how I feel. But even she looks caught up in the excitement, beaming in her seat between Dev and Anna Martinez. That's the spirit I like to see, Dr. Takumi says with a satisfied nod. Now, since our pool of candidates is significantly smaller, we've done away with the teams. The 12 of you will be training together for your remaining days here, with General Sokolov taking the lead on most of your instruction. I exchange a look with Leo. I think we all know what this means. With the teams disbanded, it's going to be every finalist against the others, and out for themselves. After breakfast, General Sokolov leads the 12 of us to the mission floor for our first training session of the day. I fall into step with Leo, noticing the looks of steely determination on my fellow finalists' faces as they pass me by. Are you feeling more competitive toward everyone else now, too? I ask Leo, especially with Asher gone. He shakes his head slightly. I wouldn't say more. I mean, the competition has been stiff enough since the beginning. He lowers his voice. I still haven't told you what happened during the bungee jumping challenge, have I? No. What? Leo glances around to make sure no one is listening before he continues. Beckett tried to mess with my harness while we were in the air. He was, I think, trying to get me killed. It would have been the perfect accident, but the pickup plane showed up just in time. I stop in my tracks, feeling as though I've just been socked in the chest. What? That actually happened and you didn't tell anyone? What was I supposed to say? Hi, Dr. Takumi, I think my teammate tried to push me 10,000 feet to my death, but I have no proof and I'm still here, so no damage done? He gives me a wry look. It would have seemed like I was just trying to get him in trouble. Remember that talk he gave us about sabotage? Yeah, exactly what Beckett was trying to do to you, I point out. My pulse quickens. We could get him kicked out for this. Leo places his hand over mine, and I'm momentarily distracted by his touch. I want him gone more than anyone, but not like that, he says. Not by weakening myself, especially if I was wrong about what I saw. It's not like he's tried anything since. With a flash, I remember the way Beckett looked at Leo after his show-stopping performance in the diving pool. You weren't wrong. I can feel it. But there's no more time to talk as we catch up to General Sokolov and the others, following them through the opening in the wall and onto the mission floor. The general stops before one of the space capsules. Today you'll be performing a flight simulation that takes you through the Europa mission's space flight path in accelerated time. We'll start with the initial launch into space on a trajectory to Mars orbit, where you'll rendezvous with the Athena supply ship, followed by the gravity slingshot to Jupiter orbit. And of course, you'll end with a lunar landing on Europa. As you know, while Sib will be piloting the spacecraft, one of you will serve as co-pilot, and each of the final six will be needed at crucial points along the journey, especially when it comes to in-flight troubleshooting. I glance at Leo, and I can tell we're both thinking the same thing. If only Asher had been here for this one. And that is the purpose of today's simulation, the general continues. To prepare you for the journey, test our co-pilot candidates, and, most importantly, gauge your reactions when the unexpected occurs and your mission and lives are at stake. You'll be completing the sim in pairs, so go ahead and choose a partner. During the downtime while waiting your turn, each of you will be measured for Europa spacesuits. Leo nudges me. Be my partner? I turn to him, feeling a sudden rush of gratitude that he is still here. Of course. We don't get any hints as to what's unfolding in the simulations, but we can hear the screams clearly from outside. The first four pairs emerge from the space capsule looking a combination of dazed, nauseous, and exhilarated, which only ramps up my anticipation. What exactly is waiting for us in there? Leo and I are the fifth pair up, and when our names are called, General Sokolov hands us each a virtual reality headset and ushers us inside the capsule. It looks identical to the mock cockpit we entered on our first training day, but with two key differences. The electronic sensors dotting the floor and blinking wires suspended from the ceiling. Take your acceleration seats and prepare for liftoff, the general commands before climbing out of the capsule to plug in from her computer.
I watch her leave, wondering if that's really all the instruction we're going to get. And then I slide into one of the two reclined seats in front of the glass cockpit. The seats are folded all the way back, and I turn my face just as Leo angles his toward me. So close. "Hi," I whisper.